Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a deeper dive into the recall race that was running against Gavin Newsom, including Assemblyman Kevin Kiley is with us. He's become one of the governor's most vocal critics in the legislature. He's now running for governor himself. Why? What's his plan? We do a deep dive. He comes in studio to talk with us. We also talk with Hugh Hewitt of Salem Radio, also the president of the Nixon Foundation. And we are going to be teaming up with him for a special recall candidates debate on August 4th. We'll get into the details of that with Hugh a little bit later. And finally, a conversation with Democratic Assemblywoman Buffy Wicks. She got a lot of attention this week for a tweet she put out saying that it's time for California to start mandating vaccines. Talk about her plan a little bit later. But we begin with Kevin Kiley, 36-year-old, who's been in the legislature for a few years, now wants to be governor. Here he is. Republican Assemblyman Kevin Kiley is in the House. Great to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
This week, we got the final list of candidates who qualified for the recall election, the order that they're going to appear on the ballot. We're just a few weeks away from those ballots actually going out. This whole thing is moving fast. There are names that are familiar to many of us, like Kevin Faulkner, John Cox, Caitlyn Jenner. We've spoken to all of them here. But another name has emerged in recent weeks, and that is Assemblyman Kevin Kiley from Sacramento. He's become one of Governor Newsom's most frequent, most aggressive critics in the legislature. He's a graduate of Harvard and Yale, and he joins us now. Welcome to The Issue Is for the first time.
That's right. I look forward to hopefully coming back many times in the future.
All right. So let's start with the question I ask everybody at the beginning, which is, why you?
Well, look, I'm running to carry this movement, what's become the greatest citizens movement in California history, over the finish line. You know, we have seen thousands upon thousands, eventually 2.1 million Californians who signed the petition, who many in cases put their lives on hold, many folks who had never been involved in politics before. I've been fighting at the Capitol for 5 years to change the trajectory of our state, but now I see a whole new element being brought to the equation, and that's the voice of the people of California.
But, I mean, everybody could say that. What's different about you?
Well, you know, I got involved in the recall for the purpose of, you know, supporting the folks who are making this happen. And so I did not, like, wake up one day and say, I want to be governor. I went around the state and did 50 events to support the recall, to try to, you know, support the folks who are making it happen. And, you know, as we got closer to this final phase of it, I had, you know, thousands of those people, probably tens of thousands, who said, you know, and I had said, I'll play whatever role I can play yeah, to get this across the finish line. And they said that we think that that's it. And, you know, having spent now 5 years in the legislature, I think I'm the only person running who's been involved or is involved at the state level. I know exactly what the problems are and how we can go about fixing them.
Well, you are still not as well known as some of the other candidates. Our viewers on CBS 13 in Sacramento know you well. A lot of viewers around the state don't. So let's get to know you a little bit. One thing that's especially interesting about your background is you started as a teacher with Teach for America in Los Angeles.
I did, yeah. So I am from Northern California. I grew up in the district that I represent, but actually did two stints in L.A. I was a teacher at a high school here called Manual Arts High School, which is kind of by USC. And then I also, after I went to law school, was back here and was in private practice for a little bit, not too far from here.
And what did you learn from that experience as a teacher in the classroom? There's a picture of that.
Well, there you go. And that's actually from a debate team that I started when I was there. And we traveled all across the state. We had a bunch of kids who got involved, and a lot of them went on to great colleges. And I actually had a tremendous teaching experience. But I also saw, you know, how badly our public education system is failing our kids in a lot of ways. I taught 10th graders, and the average reading level was 5th grade. And so I'm the vice chair of the education committee now in the assembly, and my number one priority when I was elected was to fight for education reform and educational opportunity for kids.
And you've been in the assembly since got elected in 2016, reelected in 2020 as well. You've become a big critic of the governor in the last year. You literally wrote a book about the recall. Let's put that up on the screen. It is called Recall Newsom. So what
very creative title.
What is the case, real briefly, on why Governor Newsom needs to be recalled?
He's abused the public trust. This governor took extraordinary emergency powers during the COVID-19 pandemic and used them for personal political gain and to reward the special interests that put him in office. We saw that almost immediately after this pandemic began.
There are some that say he maybe took some bad steps, but that a recall should be for something really extraordinary, something criminal that somebody does. And there are people on Newsom's team that say, look, he's done a great job. The state is in a massive surplus right now. The economy seems to be moving pretty well. The forecasts for job creation in the state are very high. What do you say to people that say he doesn't deserve to be recalled? He deserves to be reelected.
Well, the job creation is only high because we lost the most jobs. We still have only recovered half of our jobs that were lost during the pandemic, and we're having one of the weakest economic recoveries in the country. But actually, California's COVID-era outcomes have been, I would argue, the worst of any state. To take just one counterpoint, if California, on a sort of population-adjusted basis, had the same outcomes as Florida did, millions more kids would have been in school, hundreds of thousands more people would be employed, and thousands more people would be alive.
Although they would say that the numbers for California in terms of vaccinations, in terms of case count and everything, is better here than it is in Florida. Why does he need to be recalled now? You got an election next year, a few months away.
Right.
Why not just do it then? Why go through this $200 million process of having a recall election?
Well, for one thing, it should have happened earlier. You know, the legislature a few years ago passed a new law to drag out the process to make recalls harder. The whole idea of a recall is like, yes, we need him gone now because he is not doing what is best for the state. So the very fact that they've been able to push it off is itself a symptom of the political corruption that we're trying to get rid of. But I actually think the timing may end up working out pretty well. And here's why. Because if the recall is successful, then the governor, and this is what I would do, I would call a special session of the legislature, and I would move immediately to tackle the core issues that are lowering quality of life in California. I would advance education reform. I would tackle homelessness. I'd tackle the cost of living. And if the legislature refused to work with me, if legislators refused to get the message that the era of corruption was over, then they'd have a chance to face voters themselves in 2022.
I mean, wouldn't you assume that they would refuse to work with you? Why would they work with you?
Because this would change the game. If we have the people of California who put their mark directly on our state's politics, it's going to send a loud and clear message. And the one thing that I know from my time working at the Capitol, the one thing that state politicians will respond to is political pressure, the fear of losing their job. And so I would throw down the gauntlet immediately and say, here are the key issues. Here's what the people of our state are demanding. So either work with me or we're going to have another election next year.
One of the key issues that the governor is facing now and that you would face if you became the governor is still COVID. In L.A. County, officials have made the decision to bring back the mask mandate, even though the CDC says that that is not necessary. There's a lot of anger over that. There's some people that say, look, this is what's needed. We see a rise in cases. We see a lot of people that are still not getting vaccinated. What do you do about COVID-19 if you're governor, and what do you make of the mask mandate?
Well, I'd look at what other states have done and what's worked. I mean, we've been at this for quite a while, and states that have taken a much different approach than California have actually done much better, not only in terms of keeping their economy going, keeping their schools going, but having better public health outcomes as well. And so, you know, the idea, as you just mentioned, of having a new mask mandate in L.A. County, that runs against the scientific consensus that exists at the state and federal level, and it's of a piece with the way California has handled this whole thing. Nate Silver, who a lot of people look to as sort of the high priest of data science, he referred to the not particularly science-driven regime of COVID policies in California.
So what do you do differently?
Well, I would leave it to the judgment of individual citizens how to live their lives. I mean, we've never had greater familiarity with any disease at this point than we have with COVID-19. And of course, the levels are nowhere near where they were at their peak. And so folks know how to protect themselves. They know what precautions to take. And I would leave it up to individuals as to, you know, how to go about living their lives.
And part of what you want to do, though, is get rid of the state of emergency, which allows for these orders in the first place.
That's right.
Because if you said we're no longer in a state of emergency with COVID, LA County wouldn't have the ability to put in the mask mandate.
Yeah, right? I would end the state of emergency immediately. It's an absurdity that this is still in effect. Andrew Cuomo in New York has ended the state of emergency even in that state. And what's important to know is the state of emergency is a legal term. So if we end the state of emergency, that doesn't mean, oh, COVID is gone. COVID is no longer a threat. It means that we no longer meet the legal definition, which includes not only that there's a grave peril that we face, but also that localities, local jurisdictions, don't have the capacity to deal with themselves with the usual allotment of powers.
But isn't there maybe a reason that
localities should have differences. We've got 58 counties. Not every situation is going to be the same. And L.A. County, way more dense when it comes to population than other areas in Northern California. Shouldn't there be local control? Isn't that what most Republicans want?
No, I'm agreeing with you. I think that that's the way it ought to be. However, there is sort of a limit as to the powers that anyone in government can have unless under extraordinary circumstances. And I would argue that we are no longer in those extraordinary circumstances.
Let's talk also about the biggest issue for so many people, which is homelessness. Your governor, what's the plan? What changes?
Well, homelessness is an absolute tragedy. And we have, you know, what, 1,000 plus people die on the streets here in LA every year. The unsheltered homeless population in California right now is 9 times larger than the next closest state. And despite all of this, we keep throwing billions and billions more at the problem every year. The governor's own mental health czar in March said that this is not a money problem, it's a leadership problem. So we need new leadership. And in brief, what that means is you need to have a roof over the head of folks. You need to have a place for them to go. We cannot have people living and dying and languishing on the streets. And once they're there, once they're sheltered, we need to connect them with the sort of services with which they can turn their lives around. Mental health counseling, substance abuse treatment, job training, and so forth.
The governor, though, says that he's going to spend $12 billion to have more roofs over people's heads. Do you disagree with that? And if so, where do you get more money? Where do you pay for roofs over people's heads?
Well, I mean, we are spending a ton of money on homelessness. We increased spending by billions of dollars last year, as you just said, $12 billion this year. As a legislator, I actually asked for an audit of all this homelessness spending, and the governor's administration intervened to stop it from happening, even though there was a poll showing 90% of Californians favored my audit. So there is more than enough money in the system. As I just said, the governor's own top mental health official said it's not a money problem, it's a leadership problem. But the governor's approach of just putting folks in hotel rooms and then hoping that causes the problem to magically disappear, there's no evidence to support that. This isn't brain surgery. We can look to what's worked in other states and model our approach after theirs.
So real simply, what, though, does that look like with you in charge?
It means that we need to have shelter for folks, and then we connect them with services, and then maybe you can actually provide incentives once you successfully complete, let's say, drug abuse treatment, or you successfully complete mental health counseling. Then maybe at that point you get some more accommodating circumstances. But you can't just throw someone in a hotel room, not provide them the tools they need. They'll just end up back out on the street.
Let's talk for a moment about the way that the Democrats are playing this. We know that they are saying that this is a Trump-driven recall by right-wing extremists. And that is something that Newsom's team says over and over again every day. So let's just talk for a moment about President Trump and get it out of the way. Did you support President Trump in 2020? And did your thoughts on him change after January 6th?
Look, my approach to all this is I stay out of national politics. We have more than enough trouble here in California. And what Gavin Newsom is trying to do is to try to distract us so that we're focused on anything other than his failings as governor. And so national politics is divisive. People have polarized opinions on the president. I think we can find common ground in California around the very basic failures that are destroying our quality of life here. So I don't delve into any of that. That's been my approach since I was first elected.
So you have no take on President Trump and January 6th and insurrection at the Capitol? No take?
I mean, of course I condemn January 6th. I mean, that's, you know, that everyone right. did. But no, I have very much decided to stay out of the national level because that's exactly what Gavin Newsom does, is he tries to make it all about anything other than the problems we have here in California, which is why this recall is so important, by the way. In any other election, there are a million other things on the ballot. You have local races, you have a presidential race, you have Congress, you have Senate, and it's not as easy to connect the dots between the failures of our state government and the challenges that people see in their daily lives. But the recall is our opportunity to have a focused conversation as a state facing one question. Why is it that in California we sacrifice the most and we get the least in return?
So when they say that you're a pro-Trump person and that a lot of this is fueled by racism and fueled by the same extremists that we saw on January 6th, which is what they're going to say, which is what they're already saying, what do you say?
Well, I mean, certainly anyone can make things up and say right. them, but I've been, you know, out there working with folks on the recall for months and months, thousands, but tens of thousands of people who put their lives on hold, who would spend every weekend going out gathering signatures. These are not just Republicans. These are independents. These are Bernie-crats. These are people who said, my child was stuck at home for over a year for no good good reason. This governor caused my kid to fall behind. This governor lowered my kid's life expectancy while his kids were in private school. He knew full well that there was no good reason for kids to be at home, and he did it because his biggest special interest benefactor told him to do it. So to answer your earlier question, why does he deserve to be recalled? If that is not grounds for removal, I don't know what is.
Of course, there are two questions on the recall ballot. One of them is, should he be recalled? The second question is, who should replace him? And you're running against a lot of other Republicans, Larry Elder running as well. We had him on the show last week. This is what he said about you.
Republican Assemblyman Kevin Kiley.
A very good addition to my cabinet when I win. Maybe I'll try to offer him my job as chief of staff. He's a very, very sharp guy.
What'd you make of that?
Very nice, Larry, and I feel the same way about him. He's an extremely powerful voice for moving our state, our country in a better direction, and I'll give him the same offer, maybe a chief of staff.
Okay. That was during a game we play called the name game, which is where we ask for a word or a short phrase to describe the different people that you're running against. Hopefully we can do this quickly. So let's put them up there. Gavin Newsom.
Corrupt.
Kevin Faulkner.
Did some great things in San Diego.
Larry Elder.
Tremendous voice for change and a key part of this movement.
I thought you were going to say chief of staff.
Future chief of staff. Yeah, there you go.
John Cox.
Someone who's given a lot of himself and his resources to the cause here in California. Successful businessman.
Caitlyn Jenner.
Someone who's bringing, I think, a great perspective and, is part of the voices that are coming from diverse walks of life to make change in California.
All right, so you sound very complimentary about your opponents, but why, though, you over them?
Well, see, I think that question is not the primary election question in this race, because we are all on the same team when it comes to the principal issue.
But it is a question in this race, though. I mean, there is question number one.
No,
you guys
absolutely.
Are all there. But then people are looking at that ballot. There's a lot of names there, and somebody has to decide, okay, I got three different Kevins.
Right. Just three. There were five before, so there's been some winnowing of the Kevins.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? So people are trying to separate
themselves. Absolutely. Yeah. So here's the way I see it. Is that unlike a regular election where they are just your opponents, pure and simple, in this case, we all share the interest in removing Gavin Newsom because none of us can win unless that's the case. So all of my fire is going to be aimed at the governor and making the case for fundamental change. And I think that whoever draws that contrast best, whoever can show that they will be sort of the polar opposite of what Gavin Newsom has done, that person will naturally rise to the top on the second question. I think that the way that I'm going about the campaign in really trying to just carry the torch for the citizens' movement that has got us to this point, that is what this is really all about. And that is the sort of change that we need in California. It's not Democrat versus Republican. It's about restoring power to the people of California, serving public interests rather than special interests.
Okay, so let's get to know you a little bit more and have some fun. This is where we play personal issues and we get to know some of your favorites other than just the policy stuff. You ready? We put 30 seconds up on the clock for the rapid fire. Here we go. What is your favorite TV show?
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, good choice. Favorite book?
Oh, man, I'd go with probably Animal Farm. I used to teach that.
Oh, wow.
Gets better every time you read it.
George Orwell. Sport. What's your favorite sport?
Basketball. I'm a Kings fan, Sacramento, but now that the rivalry has faded because we're so bad, probably not the worst politics here in LA. Say that.
What do you do to relax?
I actually watch a lot of sports, and the one thing that's non-negotiable for me is going to the gym and getting exercise. I go crazy if that doesn't happen.
And who is your role model?
My role model, I think in politically speaking, I'm a big fan of Lincoln. I've read a lot about, his early life and how he rose. But, I mean, I think that, when you look at in my own life, I'd point to people in my family, my dad. I've been fortunate to have a lot of great mentors along the way as well.
And is it true also you were like a high school basketball free throw champion or something? What happened there?
Something like that. So I was cut from my high school basketball team. I hit my growth spurt a little late. But then I kind of randomly entered this shooting competition put on by the NBA. It was a two-person thing. So my partner and I, we won. We kept winning. And we ended up going to the NBA Finals. And it was on Nickelodeon. And we were the national champions in this basketball shooting competition, even though I was never good enough to actually play in high school. Totally random thing on my... my career, my resume.
Well, next time we do this, we got to do it on a basketball court.
Yeah.
Our thanks to Kevin Kiley, now to Hugh Hewitt, and a big announcement from us in terms of a big debate that's ahead.
We will be on the ballot.
There he is. This week, Larry Elder won his court case, and he will be on the ballot, and he accepted an invite to a special event we are co-hosting with our next guest.
Hugh Hewitt is a syndicated radio host and also the CEO of the Nixon Foundation. Hugh, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time.
Alex, it is. It's just kind of odd given that I've lived in California for 30 years and I used to do what you do, which is basically own politics in California. But I moved back to D.C. 5 years ago, but now you own the franchise. So it's good to talk with you. I'm looking forward to working with you on
this
debate.
Well, let's make this big announcement. I like that you're already sucking up. That's a real political pro right there. We are going to be working together on a big debate at the Nixon Library. Talk to us about it.
Well, on August the 4th, that's Wednesday after the next Wednesday, the Nixon Library invited six members of the recall cast, or 40 to 50 to 60, depending on how you count, to join us in a debate. And Channel 11 is going to carry it with us. And you and Christine are going to ask questions along with me and Ambassador Robert O'Brien, who's the co-chairman of the Nixon seminar, of Kevin Falconer, Kevin Kiley, John Cox, Doug Ossie, and of course, my friend Larry Elder, with whom I've been on the radio, on the Salem Radio Network for many years. But I will be fair. I remember back to the 2016 debates when I teamed up with Jake Tapper. I thought they were the most fun I ever had. So I'm looking forward to this night, and I'm hoping that Caitlyn Jenner comes back from Australia. The invitation extended to Caitlyn Jenner, filming in Australia. We don't think she's going to be there on August the 4th, but we hope.
We do. We hope that Caitlyn Jenner is a part of it as well. And so that will be airing live on Fox 11 in Los Angeles. It will be streaming live that night across the state as well. And then a condensed version of it will air on this show, The Issue Is, throughout the state that weekend as well. So why we have you, let's talk about the recall race and get your perspective on where things are at. You mentioned Larry Elder. He won his court case. He's going to be a part of the recall election. This is what he tweeted afterwards. He told me that he was going to win. He said, "Dear Alex, what did I tell you? Now on to Sacramento. Hold my beer." So, Larry Elder.
That's so Larry Elder.
Yeah, he does have he does have a good sense of humor.
He does. I sent him a note today that he ought to send flowers to the Secretary of State. Actually, getting tossed off the ballot was the best thing that could happen to Larry. First of all, he's a University of Michigan lawyer like I am. And so he knew right away they'd screwed him. He knew he was going to win. He was very, very confident. And he is, not surprisingly, in some measurements, the leader.
Right.
But the other people are also very, very skilled. And the one thing I confirmed with Channel 11, we will have no show of hand questions because they're terrible, right? Do you agree with me on that, Alex?
Yes, I agree. let's talk about the polls, though, because this week we got our first poll in a long time. This is from Nexstar and Emerson. And Larry Elder, who's only been in the race for a week, is in the lead with 16%. Businessman John Cox, former San Diego Mayor Kevin Faulkner, tied at 6%. Our guest this week, Kevin Kiley, and our former guest, Caitlyn Jenner, each at 4%. But look at this next slide. Democratic YouTube star Kevin Pathrat at 2%. But undecided, 53%. There is a lot of uncertainty in this race, Hugh.
Polling is as broken as it has ever been in the United States. So I don't really think you can pull this. And I've told all my Beltway buddies that if they think Governor Newsom has this locked up, they're absolutely wrong. Because you and I both know it's all about a turnout model that no one can predict.
Well, because we've never had a recall election where everybody gets a ballot in the mail before. So it is tough to poll it because we don't know who's going to turn out. We do know historically in politics that people are usually motivated by wanting to say F you instead of thank you. And there is a lot of anger directed at Governor Newsom. We know a lot of those people are very motivated to vote. I think the big question is whether Governor Newsom supporters, which in the past have way outnumbered Republicans, whether they will actually show up or not. And part of what I think the Newsom team is concerned about is this issue of crime. This week, the governor was out in Long Beach, aware that crime statistics are going up. We have some video of this. We were actually with him and were the pool reporter for this visit. He was able to meet with business owners. He spoke with local law enforcement leaders from around the state, met with 13 different mayors from around the state, both in person and virtually, but really focus on images like these thefts, and trying to make it easier to go after people that are doing things like that. Some people, though, put the blame on Prop 47, which, of course, was passed back in 2014, reclassified thefts under $950 as misdemeanors. So I asked the governor about that. There are some people that say some of the policies championed by Democrats, like Prop 47 and others, are making crime worse. Yeah, what do you say to that?
Well, the evidence doesn't back it up. The last three decades, we've actually seen a significant decline in crime in the state. You're seeing crime increase in red states that had no criminal justice reform commensurate with the crime rates that we're seeing here in California, particularly as it relates to gun-related crimes.
I think the number one issue is going to be, of course, the virus. Number two is going to be homelessness. Number three is going to be crime. And then taxes. I don't think I'm alone, Alex. I think there are a lot of people who believe that California is fundamentally broken. They're all going to vote. Now, you have to tell me whether or not the teachers' unions, the public employees' union, the service union employees, the prison guards, the tribes, will they get people to turn out? Will they get them to turn those ballots back in? I don't know. We've never done this before, except the Gray Davis Arnold recall. So it's a one-off. And I think the debate will matter a great deal.
Well, that's why we got to watch, right? August 4th, yep. We're excited to work with you. Thank you so much for inviting us to be a part of it as well. We're really honored to be a part.
Thanks to Hugh. Now to Assemblywoman Buffy Wicks, who got a lot of attention for this tweet this week.
Welcome back. This tweet from Democratic Assemblywoman Buffy Wicks getting a lot of attention this week. She says, quote, "It's time we do something uncomfortable, make vaccines mandatory at schools, gyms, hospital, workplaces, etc." Buffy Wicks is a Democrat who represents the Bay Area in the Assembly. She's a veteran of the Obama White House, a mother of two. Welcome to The Issue Is for the first time.
Thank you very much for having me.
So what is your main point when it comes to vaccine mandates?
Well, I think, look at what's happening right now. The Delta variant is increasing. Right now, in many counties across California, if we had the tier system, we'd be in the purple tier, which means schools would be closed, businesses would be shut down. I don't want to go back to that. I don't think anyone else wants to as well. And if you look at the rates of hospitalization, it is almost 100% from unvaccinated folks. And so I think we need to have a real hard conversation about mandating vaccines. You know, our vaccination rates are leveling out. And, you know, we have to tackle this, and I think we have to tackle it quickly. So I spoke out and said, I think our employers and our businesses should be requiring proof of vaccination. You know, I go to the gym, I go to the store. I've never been asked if I am vaccinated. I've never been asked for my QR code on my phone. And we have this tool that we can use. So I think we need a cultural shift where our employers and our businesses are mandating that people get vaccinated.
You mentioned hospitals. How would that work? So essentially, you can't go get care if you haven't been vaccinated?
Well, certainly hospital workers, I think, should be required to be vaccinated. Obviously, if someone needs care, they should, of course, be able to get it. But across the board, I just think we need to have a tougher standard here.
You know the controversy here, and there's plenty of it. There are people that say, look, this technology hasn't been around that long. We don't know what these vaccines are going to do 20, 30 years down the road. It still doesn't even have full approval from the FDA. It's still at emergency use approval. So with all of those questions, why should you be mandating me to put something in my body that I don't necessarily trust? What do you say?
So with hundreds of millions of vaccinated folks out there with very limited issues at all, it's time we do this. And we do expect the FDA is going to approve this. It's a matter of time. They're going through their process. But it is time we do this. And that's why you see public health officials like the ones in Contra Costa County and other places. Also, I saw there was an announcement. New York City mayor is also asking the same thing. So it's not just me as an assembly member. It's also public health officials who are saying it's time we do this. It's time we take this step and mandate this, because I, for one, don't want to go back to where we were.
So in terms of your colleagues in the assembly, in terms of the governor's office, are they with you on this? Have you had conversations with them?
It's exciting to me that we're starting the conversation. You know, I'm exploring legislation in terms of what that could look like for our employers. And I'm committed, no matter what, to make sure that we continue to have the conversation. We push forward with the most aggressive way that we can ensure that we get everyone vaccinated.
It is a very interesting conversation, Buffy Wicks. Thanks for your part in it. We end all of our segments with music here. And since you're an Obama campaign veteran, we're playing We Take Care of Our Own, which I'm sure brings you back to some of those rallies and ties into your message.
Many rallies, I've heard this, yes.
About vaccines. We wrap things up when we come back.
Our thanks to Buffy Wicks and Hugh Hewitt and Kevin Kiley. And thanks to you for listening. Next week, our friend, Matthew Friend, comedian impressionist, is going to be in studio for the first time. He's hilarious. You're not going to want to miss that. And we'll have the latest on the recall. And again, that debate, August 4th at the Nixon Library, 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific time, live. Can't wait to have that and have that here on the Issue Is podcast. For now, I'm Alex Michelson. Talk to you next week.